This year, our podcast will explore the multi-layered experiences which encompass Ireland's past, and will also put into context how the sense of heritage is all about our collective experience, and why so much that went before still resonates in the present. I hope you enjoy the show. What is heritage? It's the culmination of our shared experiences over the millennia. It's the who we are and where we've come from. It's the cultures and traditions which have fashioned the inhabitants of this island. It's the habitat and wonders of the natural world all about us. So much goes into contributing to our collective memory. There are stories and buildings that speak of former days. Our seascapes, wild places, gardens, parks, inland waterways, folklore and craft, all contain their own mysteries and harbour their own stories. Over the past 16 years, National Heritage Week has been a focal point, bringing together communities and people across the country, and is now one of the most significant dates in Ireland's cultural calendar. Last year, it catered for more than 800 projects, and in response to COVID-19 guidelines, National Heritage Week moved away from events only, and invited heritage enthusiasts throughout the country to create projects which could be shared online. As a result of continued public health restrictions, National Heritage Week 2021 will retain the project element introduced last year. Open the door to heritage is this year's message from the Heritage Council. In particular, we're calling on heritage newcomers to get involved in the celebration, and we're also encouraging those who may not have traditionally feel included in heritage matters to get involved. One of Ireland's leading advocates for the promotion of heritage is Christy Kniff from Clonfert in County Galway, who with more than 30 years of involvement in the sector, won last year's coveted Heritage Hero Award. In today's podcast, he talks about the importance of National Heritage Week, which he says is a celebration of much we hold dear, and so much that we should preserve. Let's hear from Christy Kniff. My name is Greg Canty, and I'm delighted to welcome Christy Kniff onto the Heritage Council podcast today. How are you keeping, Christy?
I'm keeping very well. I'm quite happy where I am at the moment, here in the west of Ireland, absorbing the little bits of sun that we got, and in China.
We deserved it when it came.
Oh, we deserved it when we came. The loud is back out again. But then, you know, we don't mind. We're used to it. We're hardy.
And I think it's very appropriate as we're approaching another National Heritage Week in August that I'm chatting to a heritage hero. So my understanding is, Christy, that you're the official title holder of the Heritage Hero Award.
I am, surprisingly, really, as far as I'm concerned, but I am. And, you know, it was an honour that was bestowed on me via the Heritage Council, through the Heritage Council. But I also know that, you know, quite a lot of people in Galway and over the borders, and I think a small hand in all of this too, behind my back. But I got quite a shock last year when I was contacted to accept the award. Wasn't even in my mind. I didn't think. Somebody mentioned to me earlier that they were nominating me, which they have to do. They have to notify you. And I said, well, that's grand, but, you know, really don't be wasting your time. But anyway, they went ahead and I am the Heritage Hero.
If I'm hearing the words Heritage Hero, you'd like to think of someone who is just absolutely absorbed with heritage. And I think when I look at the little bio that I have for you, that's the case. And where did that come from an early age, Christy?
Well, the people that I would hold responsible for my situation, if you like, first of all, it would be my grandfather and my grandmother. I was reared with my grandparents, so I was fortunate. And sometimes, you know, for a young fellow to be reared with that older generation of people, you absorb an awful lot. It's almost symbiotic. I inherited in several different ways. I was told an awful lot. I was shown an awful lot. And then my granny was a great reader, so she ensured that I read. Which was an important thing. But the person that I really would, I suppose, say inspired me as far as heritage was concerned was my grandfather, who really probably didn't even use the word himself or understand the word. But, you know, he played the accordion. He would sing an old bit of a song there when he'd be going along. He'd be whistling and things like that. He'd be pointing out stuff to me. There were people that actually moved from their original place of residence in the 1950s. the people that lived in the Callows in Clonfert, where I come from, and they all moved upland in the 1950s and into the 1960s. So he would go back every summer to cut turf and to sow the bog garden and stuff like that. And he'd bring me on the bar of the bike as a little fella. And I'd be asking him about things. I'd find stuff, broken cups and pots and, you know, and then listen to him and a few of the other old fellas, as I thought they were then. And they actually weren't, but they were old in comparison to some fella that was only 3 or 4 years of age or maybe five. And they'd be chatting and talking, and they'd be talking about other people that lived in the Callows, a place that had nobody in at that stage. So that inspired me in many ways.
I wonder, in many cases, is it a coincidence that that knowledge comes from an older person who may be coming towards that period of their lives where they have the deeper appreciation for where they come from, and they have this sense of, we need to pass on this knowledge?
I know exactly what you mean, and it does actually become something that you do need to do. You realize that eventually you start thinking about a lot of different things that you may have yourself, you know, stuff you collected. You say, well, it's time to start labeling this stuff, or whatever it might be, or books that you might have. It's time to, you know, who do I give these to, or whatever. But it's the very same with heritage and knowledge and that sense of the lore and the stories of the place. You do realize that you are actually a custodian of it. Eventually, some people don't. Some people take it for granted. But you do realize that you can actually carry an awful lot of knowledge that needs to be passed on and needs to be shared before you actually lose it all or take it with you.
Because in a way, he was teaching you, wasn't he?
Well, he was teaching me, but he didn't even see it like that. He was actually sharing stuff that he knew with me and telling me little stories. And, you know, I'd find things like maybe bottles that were melted where the forest had gone on fire because this was a bog area, and like to melt bottles and jars and stuff. And this to me looked like, you know, something totally different. There was strange stuff out there in the fields and that. And he'd say, well, that's where Jack Egan's house was. And then I'd ask him who Jack Egan was, and you'd find that Jack Egan was an old fella that had a hump on his back, and that when he died, they had to tie him to the bed. And you got all these great stories, and the fella that comes in and cuts the rope with the knife and that sort. So you get all this stuff that almost makes almost believable, almost unbelievable. But he's sharing all these different stories with you and making it interesting in that sense. So there's, even if he didn't mean to, he actually made it stick because it grasps you. It caught you at that particular time.
Yeah, and that element of storytelling to help pass that on onto another generation so that's you right. Can carry it.
Well, it's important. I think we all have to do that. And I know the same when I was a young fellow going to national school. I was very fortunate that I had a national school teacher, Michael Joyce. And Michael was a great teacher when it came to history and the legends and stuff like that. The stuff that excited us. The same thing, we always had a nature table at the bottom of the room. And that's something I love to see now. That's, you know, schools are sort of going back to that. Even the whole aspect of the Heritage Council's Heritage in Schools, that project or program, like that's so important that you actually go back into the schools. You might be bringing in specialists now because teachers have a lot of administration and all sorts of stuff to do now. Then, you know, they just can't be everything. But they are still doing an awful lot. But where you had this table down at the bottom of the room, and we were doing all the things that we actually couldn't do now, bringing in frog spawn in a big sweet jar and collecting leeches and watching them climb up along the jam jar and picking all the leaves and matching that to, you know, we had the books in the library, we could go and do a bit of research and finding out what you could make out of them and stuff like that. So that was great learning, if you like, great teaching. And we didn't actually realise that we were being educated. We just did that because we loved it, because it was so natural, it was so natural a way of learning. It was like going to school outside in many ways.
And I know with Heritage Week this year, and I'm sure as well as every other year, there's a specific focus on getting every age group involved. And that's the perfect way. And it falls during the summer, it's in August, so it's a great time to get the young ones involved in little projects and everything else and stir their interest, just like the way it was with you and your granddad.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the way it was with a lot of people of my generation, if you like, as well. Well, we'll say, for example, the likes of the day that's dedicated, the 18th of August, dedicated to the wild child idea, that notion of children going out into the wild, but actually going wild in the wild, not going wild pulling down things, but actually going out and actually feeling excited about what they find and being fortunate enough to be out there with somebody that can actually show them things, show them maybe listen to the birds or show them the particular plants or grasses. You know, it's only when you go out with somebody that really knows. I've been fortunate enough to be out with people, ecologists and that, that when they throw down a meter grid on the ground, they can show me so many plants and different species in that meter that I just walk on, I see this grass because I'm not an, you know, that's not my area of expertise in any sense, even though, you know, you go away and you realize, my God, you know, there's just so much around me. But the same with the kids there, you know, chasing butterflies and doing the different things they do, you know, collecting the leaves. You know, kids collecting leaves is an amazing thing. They bring home all these leaves and they can, you know, they can press them or collecting particular flowers, as long as they're not collecting the flowers from the burn and places like that. As long as there's an element of care in all of it, you know, that we don't do things in an indiscriminate way, that we actually go out and, you know, we teach people the reasons as to why we should manage and maintain those roadside verges, maintain them as special places, and that we learn about the ecology and that, you know, that we realize that, you know, without the bee and without the various other insects and fauna and flora then to support all of that, that, you know, that our system breaks down. And we've lost a lot of that, you know. As I'm speaking to you now, I'm actually in Mulroney. And I've just come out from Achill. We've just driven out from Achill to do this interview here. And while I was in there, I was able to listen to the larks and stuff like that. When I was a child growing up, I often lay on the grass for half an hour, maybe an hour, just listening and looking up out of the grass at larks just going up to the sky and that lovely music. But we lost that for a good few years. We lost it because we were probably going too fast ourselves. It doesn't mean they weren't there. It just meant that an awful lot of us didn't hear it. And the strange thing is this last year and a half or whatever it has been, year, it seems like 100 years now at this stage, with the coronavirus lockdown, I think an awful lot of us have actually begun to appreciate the sounds around us. We're seeing a lot more. Everywhere I look, the fields are actually yellow with buttercups and other flowers, which is, I'm not certain at this stage, and I'm an advocate all my life of heritage, whether it's what I didn't see them or whether they weren't there. And that's a very strange thing to say, you know, that maybe they were there and we didn't see them. And that's what we have to do with nature. We need to engage with it because it's actually good for us.
I had a wonderful conversation with one of the heritage officers and she was talking about the dawn chorus.
Oh, the dawn chorus, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought, wow, what a lovely idea. Like, I'm 56. It was the first time anyone pointed that out to me and to appreciate it. So now when I'm going for a little stroll, I'm actually paying a lot more attention to the singing of the birds and the different sounds and everything, and it's amazing.
Well, the dawn chorus, I've been on a number of actual organized dawn choruses. Always happen on the 16th of May. I think it might have changed, but it actually doesn't matter. Any morning, every morning, you have a dawn chorus. But we were fortunate here in East Galway, South East Galway, where I come from, that we have a wonderful man, an ornithologist, an ecologist, and a writer, Stephen Heary. And Stephen, through his volunteerism with Birdwatch, used to take us out on the dawn chorus. And to be with an expert like that, that would hear a bird coming in, you know, just he could hear this music, he'd hear this particular sound, and he'd hear something else coming in from another side. And he's bringing you in on this. It's almost like bringing in the orchestra. He's bringing us all in. All this music is coming in. Or to go out, I had a great experience a few years ago of going on an evening session with a young man from Portumna to hear the deers rutting in the forest park in Portumna. The deers didn't come out. We heard no deers. But the one thing that we heard, that I heard, that I hadn't appreciated before was what I would call the primeval sound of the forest in Portumna. The movement of the wind and the sounds, it was so natural, you know, it was as if we were only after coming out of the forest, which we did come out of, you know, we're back at the prehistoric period, you know, we would have lived in and around the edges of the forest and that. But this music was almost natural. This sound, this the wind and the trees and that was so natural that you felt comfortable.
Yeah, and of course, the rutting is a big deal as well, isn't it, down in Killarney, in the Killarney Park?
Oh, Killarney, and in many places throughout the country. So yeah. There's all these, there's so many different things that happens around us that sometimes we just don't seem to have time to hear, or we can be too busy, and we are busy. I suppose that's the great thing. I'm in that realm where I'm retired, or actively retired, I like to think, even though other people are think that fellow does nothing. So he's completely inactive, but you can be very active without doing much. You can be doing things in a different way, you know. You can actually be absorbing and taking in what's around you.
And you were talking very quickly there, and you used a word that I didn't recognize. It was an ornithologist.
An ornithologist.
What in the name of God is that?
An ornithologist is what I was when I was 14 years of age, and sadly didn't keep it up. An ornithologist is somebody that studies birds. And I remember when I joined the IWC back in 1968. It was founded in 1968, and I remember joining the IWC when we had great people at that time. Well, we still have great people, but we had these national names that would come to a little rural hall like Lardenstown, which is beside me. It was only a small little rural hall, an old school. Show some slides. Oscar Mearn, David Cabot, the people like these. I'm not going to be able to name them all off, but these people were coming out through a man who actually worked on board the Mona, a man called Dan Davey, the late Dan Davey. Dan was informed at the time, and he used to organise these talks in this rural hall. And I, as a young fellow, was fortunate enough, my uncle Brendan, who was a great advocate for heritage in many ways, and yet was a man that would shoot and all sorts of stuff, and fish and everything, and he'd say, well, that's contradictory. But it's not, actually, you know, because a person like that needs to conserve if they need to be able to carry on with their own sport. It really, you know, we've always done these things, and, you know, we can change our attitude towards this, or we can change things. But anyway, to get back to the ornithology, I joined the IWC, and I used to go around, didn't have binoculars because I couldn't afford them. I had a fairly sharp pair of eyes, a lovely little flip notebook that I lost, and I'd love to get one again that was published by the Reader's Digest. And I remember my granny buying me the big Reader's Digest book of birds, a book of British birds. This thing was huge. It was, oh, it felt like it was 18 inches high, but it wasn't quite. But every bird that you'd find in England was in this, or in the British Isles. And of course, you know, we have, most of our birds are common. And you could spend hours out. I used to collect birds' feathers, of all things, broken bird shells and all this sort of thing. You know, you were so fascinated by it. And then, of course, to tune back in then to something like Wigfrey and Square with Eamon de Butler and Gerrit van Gelderen. They really championed heritage in their day. You know, back in the black and white days, to watch these two characters, one an Irishman, wonderful Irish, wonderful musician, that was Eamon de Butler, and the other man, Gerrit van Gelderen, a Dutchman, with that wonderful Dutch form of English, if you like. That's, I was fascinated by it. And he was the artist. And he would draw, and you'd see a Hooper swan or a mute swan appearing on a screen. It was as if he was drawing from the back. Obviously, there was some sort of a technical thing going on there, but these birds were emerging. And one was talking about it, and the other was drawing it up. And, you know, it taught us so much as young people, any of us that engage with those programs. And it's very important. And, of course, this is where the likes of Heritage Week works, because we have all this engagement where people can actually engage with the heritage that's around them, no matter what sort of heritage it is, whether it's that natural heritage or the built heritage, as in the archaeology and the architecture and that, or cultural heritage.
Yeah.
And cultural heritage is everywhere. We have it all around us in every sense. It's part of us.
And heritage continued to grab you, and I know there were a few early projects that you got involved in.
Well, I suppose some of the more professional projects that I engaged with initially was, you know, when I was moving into maybe more maturity and things like that, when you get involved with committees. But one of the big projects that we were chasing at the time, back in the 1980s initially, and working right through up until the 2000s, was trying to effect conservation for the Romanesque doorway in Clonfert. That doorway goes back to the 12th century, somewhere around 1180, there or thereabouts. Wonderful sandstone edifice, highly ornate, highly carved, seen as the high point of Romanesque in Ireland. But sandstone that's open to the Irish weather decays, and that's, you know, the doorway had become very fragile. But we would have... as a development group working with both the Church of Ireland and the local community itself, the local activists in the community, we would have been engaged trying to find some way to undertake conservation and to try and halt that rate of decay. And we had tried all sorts of options. Because it was privately owned, it's a church owned by the Church of Ireland, it's owned by the church, so it's not state-owned. So it's not, it couldn't have been a national monument, and you know, it doesn't fit under the remit. The constitution prohibited that. So we were trying to find ways, and it wasn't until the Heritage Council was actually set up that we actually found a way. You know, in 1995, we had the Heritage Act. The Heritage Council are officially formed, and now we have a mechanism whereby we can actually engage. Prior to that, people from the OPW were helping us, giving us advice, but they were prohibited from spending state money on the building. They just couldn't. They couldn't engage at that level. And the Heritage Council worked with us, and in many ways, it was probably as big a relationship for some of the people in the Heritage Council as it was for us. We learned an awful lot at community level, but they also, it was one of the first conservation plans that they actually engaged in. Might not have been the first that was published, but it was the first that they actually started and engaged. It was a long process. And we built great friendships during all of that time. We became very, very friendly with the Heritage Council. And they funded us, they supported us, they mentored us, they gave us advice, they came up with policies as to how best to do things, you know, and they set the roadmap for what should be done. And they've done that for projects all over the country. And, you know, and all of that, if you like, was signed into law, the whole Heritage Act. The Heritage Bill was signed into law by our current president, Michael D. Higgins. He was the Minister for Heritage at the time.
And you were saying before that happened, there was no obvious place to go to for help. And all of a sudden then...
There was no obvious place for communities to go. No.
Yeah.
No, there was no obvious place. And the wonderful thing about working with the Heritage Council, I sound like an ambassador here for the Heritage Council, but this is not payback time. If I was critical, I'd be critical, and I'm not. No, they were absolutely wonderful in so far as they could actually take people with them, help people along, and give them the professional supports that they require. And that's one of the things that's so important. And of course, the great thing that came out of the Heritage Council, that one of them, I suppose, apart from funding and that type of thing, funding is essential. But the most critical aspect of the Heritage Council is that they actually have a full suite or team of heritage officers. So the majority of counties, maybe every county might potentially have now, I don't know where it's at, but the grand plan was that every county would have a heritage officer. And the way it's made up is that each of those heritage officers have different skills. They have qualifications in different areas. They're experts in different things. So what you actually have is you have almost a collegiate of specialisms and experts and that. So that collectively, rather than, because one person can't have all the skills, it won't work. And with the heritage officers, they're employed through the county councils, but they're working between the council and the Heritage Council. And I suppose really what they're doing is they're promoting heritage at local level throughout their counties in all sorts of different ways, either through supports, through advice, or whatever else that might be, you know, having exhibitions and open days and all of that. So, you know, and I know that people all over the country appreciate the supports they get from the heritage officers.
And I know last year, obviously with lockdown and everything, there was a restriction on the types of activities we could have during Heritage Week. But still, there were over 800 events and different projects logged.
Yeah,
I suppose this year now, hopefully it'll be a bit clearer, but I guess we need to keep in our thoughts that it could be a similar type scenario with online projects and, you know, maybe some real life projects and everything else.
Well, that's the thing. Last year was difficult. It did put pressure, I suppose, on communities to go online for a lot of events. But actually, people learned an awful lot from that, too. Because the amount of people that actually came to the realization that you can actually make all sorts of little micro videos using your phone, things like these, almost doing yourself out of work in that sense, that they all were becoming a semi-expert what they did. But there was so much stuff produced last year. And the great thing about a lot of the material that was produced last year, all the online stuff, is that can remain there as an archive. You know, it's almost, without it ever having been planned that way, the work that was done, I know myself, I was engaged in several videos on both medieval Loch Ray and medieval Admiralty, where we're making small videos on aspects of the built heritage. But they're going to be there as resources into the future. You know, once they're saved and kept, that's material that will be there into the future. Yeah. But then some outdoor stuff is able to happen as well and could happen. And this year, it looks like we're going to be able to do more outside stuff. You know, taking everything into account, we'll say social distancing and wearing the masks and all the things that we must do. But we might find when August comes that we can't do it. And if we can't, we're going to have to come up with different formulas and different ways of doing it. And social media is a very useful mechanism for communities.
And for the listener, Christy, who doesn't know an awful lot about this area, but they're interested and they haven't been involved in projects in the past, they can get involved, can't they?
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's the one thing that's so important, because the Heritage Council, you know, if you visit the Heritage Council's website, www.heritagecouncil.ie, you will be able to go in there into the Heritage Week events. And what you actually do is first of all, you need to read. It's like anything, read the small print. Just see what's required of you, because, you know, you have a certain duty of care as well. You know, you have to be careful about bringing people places and getting permissions and stuff like that. But that's something that we should be thinking about anyway when we're doing any sort of projects. But, you know, you get your permissions and ensure safe to travel and all that sort of stuff to sites, and that you can win on the site. But you then log your event. You actually log the event on that website. Say where it's going to be, when it's going to be, is there a charge? Generally, there's no charge for events during Heritage Week, but there may be situations where a group has costs and maybe they have to charge. You know, I'm not, you know, one, you know, the group themselves will know if, you know, but generally during Heritage Week, most events are free. And people then can actually check that. Also, a booklet gets produced as well. And then with your local heritage officers, you can also register with your local heritage officer. Most of them do up, you know, circulars as well, and they will notify the community groups that events are taking place. And you know, it can be so varied. It can be so varied. It totally depends on what aspect of heritage you're interested in. Yeah. If you're a person that's interested in the natural heritage, there might be a particular, you know, there might be a bog near you or something like that that has particular plants, or there might be a river where you want to deal with the heritage of water. And actually, the Water Heritage Day is on the 22nd. So, you know, there's all these different aspects. Or you may have a graveyard. Graveyards are wonderful places because in many ways they're publicly owned. You don't have the same difficulties about seeking permission to go in there. But they're multi layered when it comes to heritage. You have natural heritage in there, you have cultural heritage, you have genealogy, you have all these different strands that people, you know, there might be something highly significant in your local graveyard, or there might be something very poignant in your local graveyard. You might actually find that there's a headstone or a memorial there that almost shocks you when you see it. Or you might find that there's some wonderful artwork on your memorials and that you can explain or talk about. And even if you can't have a live event in there, that's the sort of stuff that you can actually you can do online.
My understanding, it can even extend to some of your interests like music and writing and the history of all of that within your locality.
Absolutely, you know, it's so broad. We'll say initially when the different aspects of heritage were set out, there was 13 different aspects, but that's much broader. You know, over the years, it has broadened, it has developed. So everything is, you know, part of our heritage. Our place names, our field names, the words we use, those Irish words that we use in East Galway, where we have lost our native tongue, but we still have this residual Irish language that we don't even think about sometimes. Things like that, a place like the Slievochtis, a place like the Slievochty Mountains, you know, where you have wonderful music. Now, you have wonderful music all over the country. There's different places. We're very fortunate in County Galway that we've had so many Ceilidh bands. You know, places like Kiltarmer, Ballinakil, Leitrim, Woodford, you know, all these places where we had wonderful individual musicians, that you have this these wonderful sounds, this wonderful music that survives. And it might be as simple as having a night just listening to the music of whoever it might be. Or it could be something totally different. You know, you could have something. In our situation, you have Lady Gregory and Yeats, and that's within the county. Well, there's a whole team that, and of course, that's dealt with in the county as well. We say we have a dedicated group of people in Kiltartan that look after all of this, Sister Dolores and her troop of people. But, you know, these are the sort of things that we can share, or you might be even stuff that we don't even treat as heritage. You know, you might have an old industrial site. A lot of us might say, oh, well, that was an old mine, or that was a workshop or something in the past. But that actually, it's now part of industrial heritage. So everything has the parish pump, you know, the post box, the old post box that you can drive by. It may not be working anymore. The door might be taken off it to stop people from putting letters into it. Or if the door is on it, it might have something on it, maybe a V for Victoria, VR, Victoria Regina on it, you know. Think about that. Think about the heritage of that. That's something that's there since before the setting up of the Seerstadt, of the Free State. And you might actually find that it might be a Victorian box with a Free State door on it. You know, and everything has the potential to tell a story about an aspect of heritage or to, you know, draws into to heritage.
Yeah, so your first heritage project could be something in your locality.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's where people should always focus. Keep it easy. It's easy enough if you're part of a bigger society or a bigger group. But it could be as simple as the pump outside your front door. Pump that's now, you know, no water coming in it, half rusty or completely rusty maybe. Your project could be that your individual project where you might be able to work with your family might be to go out and take some of the briars from around that. But making sure that you're not tearing out a bird's nest or doing some harm in the meantime, you know, carry out your inspections and that. But it might be a matter of bringing that pump back into the community, painting it up and maybe putting a little flower pot beside it or something. And that you're actually putting it back into focus. That could be your project. It doesn't have to be a big highfalutin thing where you expect 150 people to come to it or that. But it could equally be the bigger thing. You know, one of the things that I have witnessed over the years, and I found it quite interesting, because I've been involved in Heritage Week for years and years, is the amount of people that actually take their time out during Heritage Week. We have such a thing now as Heritage Week tourists. I've had people make contact to know what time will such a thing be over on Friday night or Tuesday night, because I want to go on to something else. And I've had people come to me that I remember one year having somebody come that said that we're down from Donegal. I was talking about graveyards. We were talking in a graveyard, and they said, "But we're going to such a thing in Innes tomorrow night." So they were moving right through. They were actually using that as their holiday. That they had already looked at the booklet and said, "You know, there's five or six things here that excite me. I'd love to go to that." So it's amazing. You know, it has actually become a very popular week. And of course, heritage is not just for a week. This, the Heritage Council themselves will tell you that. The whole idea of Heritage Week is to give people an opportunity to share and put stuff out there. But, you know, it's like getting a puppy. A puppy is for life. You know, heritage is for life. You have to look after it and mind it and care for it and be respectful to it. And also realize that heritage is actually the very earth that we walk on. You know what I mean? The whole thing of biodiversity and that. And we're part of that. So we should regard ourselves as a part of it, not as the enemy of it, or not as somebody that's affected by it in a bad way. We shouldn't see it as problematic. We should actually work with it and see it as something that we can't actually work without or live without.
So, Christy, so many years on, you're the granddad now, and there's the young kid there, the young 3 or 4 year old, full of curiosity. What do you say to them in the lead up to Heritage Week this week? You're going to do a little project together, you and the little fella, the little girl. What would you do with them?
Well, I'm very fortunate that I am a granddad. I'm a granddad twice over, so I have a little granddaughter who's 2 years of age.
Okay.
Now, she's getting closer to when she'll be able to understand. But the little fella is only 3 months old.
Give him a tiny bit of time to get into the rhythm of things.
And that. But what I would love to do there, this little one, she'd take me by the finger and she'll bring me off for a walk. And even as it is, her mother, who's a Spanish lady, and my own youngest son, Keane, Keane is engaged with the earth. You know, Keane is a gardener, so he's really in touch with the earth around him. But she can come back in with a little fistful of flowers and things like that. So she's already engaging. And when she goes out for a walk with her mammy, she's going to go over and she's going to bring a few carrots for the ponies and things like that. So I don't even have to, I don't have to engage there. This little child is already engaging with what's around her. She realizes what's around and she can see it, and she gets all excited when she sees the squirrels and that where she is and stuff like that. So from that age, you can actually, you can get children to engage with all of this and bring them out into the woodlands and the forests and let them play and let them see the little animals and birds that's out there. And, you know, if there is a castle or something around, bring them to that castle. And as they get that little bit older, tell them a little bit about it. Okay, you're not going to tell them exactly what year it was built and what year the battle of whatever it was occurred and that sort of stuff at that stage. But you are going to tell them about the battles that did happen here. You're going to excite her, you know, you're like we were. You know, I have a tar house quite close to me at home. It's lived in now. It was re-roofed, it was restored, conserved, but restored, that double process. But in my childhood, I climbed the walls of that and I did things I shouldn't have done. Now, I'd be encouraging kids not to do that, but my grandmother would have been definitely encouraging me not to do it. But I engaged with that building, and even there, that engagement, you know, was part of my, if you like, initiation into the world of built heritage. You know, that I actually engaged with a castle. Didn't know it was a tower house, didn't know that we'd use that terminology. And again, I suppose that's one of the things, you know, from a professional perspective, we can use terms as professionals. But the ordinary person in the field, the farmer, often knows more about. The farmer definitely will know more about what's in his land or on his land. When a farmer tells you that there's something down at the bottom of the field, there's a big round jug down at the bottom of the field, he mightn't know that it was a barrel. He might know that it actually dates to the Bronze Age or the Iron Age. He doesn't have to know that. But what he does know is that it's something different on the landscape and that he has observed that and his father has observed it over the years. And also that he's the very person that actually preserved and protected that. Because if he didn't do that and his ancestors didn't do it, we wouldn't look at it today. So in many ways, it has been the handing down. So that little child that takes you by the hand and brings you off into the woodland or brings you into the castle to tell you about, they're the ones that's actually going to be doing the very same thing again in a few years. They have their children and they're going to be the old, if you like, the old sages like myself, the old fellows with the grey hair, that kids are going to be coming to ask questions. I'm very fortunate that I live in a place where we have a very, very good principal in our school. And 3 weeks ago, I was on a cycle, which is a good thing for me. You know, you need to get out and exercise. But Niall Kelly brought me on a cycle, which I don't know how many youngsters, it wasn't my responsibility to count them. I said, even to him coming out, I said, well, if you have near enough, it'll do, you know, we'll be all right. Sometimes we have enough, looks like we have enough going home. That wouldn't do when they got home, of course. But those kids were brought off down into the Callows in Clonfert. They could engage with the landscape, the fields. I brought them into the old house where my mother was born. My uncles had that sort of, they repaired it or restored it, whatever the word would be. Maybe not to strict rules of that, but at least it has a roof on it and it'll stand there for another 70 or 80 or 100 years. But the point was that Niall, as a teacher, and all these teachers that we have in national schools and secondary schools that engage this way, they bring their students out to see these things. Those children of today that are in fifth and sixth class that can come out on their bicycles, they will be doing the same thing when they become teachers and different things. They will actually learn so much. And that they'll actually remember. The one thing that they will all remember is the one that fell into the drain while we were crossing. That'll always be remembered. But that's almost like an anchor point for linking you to other things. You know, one of the things that would have stuck in my mind as a child growing up, when I used to be with my grandfather, was seeing the old goats that we had. We had a few old goats for eating ragwort. You know, that was the theory anyway. Whether they ever ate it or not, I don't know. But they were to protect the cattle from the ragwort, this yellow weed. And I remember as a child being terrified of those. And yet, the place that he was bringing me to, the old place that I brought those kids to last week, that old place was heaven to me. It was an amazing place because it was a place full of stories, memories, old men drinking tea, if you like, out of a kettle, and the chatting about things that I didn't understand. And me wrote in the corner in the old furniture that was left behind when they moved out of the house in 1952. This was probably all happened in 1961 or 62 or maybe even 60. But that's the, you know, so there's a whole learning process as you go along, and there's a whole, it's almost, I can't even think of the word, but you become absorbed into what's around you. If it's done in a nice, soft, pleasurably manner, and it's done almost as a form of play or memory, or that, you know, this is not, it's much harder to learn when you're taught.
Yeah.
This is natural teaching. You know, you learn from what's around you, and you learn from those that are around you.
And Christy, we're making an assumption then that it's the granddad and the young kid, and the granddad or the grandmother has all of the knowledge and they're passing that on. And I think in many cases, it's the busy parent today who a lot of this stuff will have just passed them by and they won't have the knowledge. And I guess in a way, it wouldn't be the worst idea for a project is to grab that knowledge yourself, do some of that learning yourself with the children. Absolutely. And feed their natural curiosity.
Absolutely, because there's great opportunities at the moment. And that's one of the things where we're in that world where we can learn so much. Heritage Week in itself is an eye-opener for anybody that attends any of the events. Yeah, and the age doesn't matter whatsoever. If you're able to get out there and engage with it, and then, of course, we can learn anyway. And the other great thing is that a lot of us get the opportunity to go back and do a bit of, you know, there can be courses and that's the local societies running and things like that. Try and engage with them. But there is a time in your life, I suppose, where you're very busy doing other things because you have to rear a family and you have to look after mortgages and stuff. But at the same time, that's only for a certain period of time. But even if you think about it in a totally different way, the GAA. We could see something like the GAA, hurling and football and handball and all the games that go with that as, well, that's not heritage, but it actually is. It's part of our cultural, you know, there's a lot of, we have tangible heritage, we have intangible heritage. You know, there's an awful lot of stuff there. There's the history of it all. There's you know, the club and the parish and, you know, thinking about, if you think about the wider thing, why are you playing for Meelic Air Court? Why is Clonfert left out of that equation? I'm only speaking from a local level, but these are questions we can ask ourselves. And if we look at that from the perspective of the history of it, and we can make sense of the history, we then begin to realize, like, it's much bigger than, you know, there's several different parts in it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. And with the history comes the story.
Yeah, with the story. And with the story, you often need the storyteller and the old fella or the old lady, the granny. The granny is a great storyteller. The granny is the one that tells children stories to get them to sleep. And the granddad should, I've been sexist here now and I don't mean to be, but I have to be careful. The granny has gone out of this room. We're okay, she's gone off for a walk. But you have to be careful what you say. But the granny or the granddad can have the potential to be the old Shannon Key. You know, he's not much good for anything else. He might weed a few things in the garden and that, and he might pull the wrong plants and that and get into trouble with granny. But he also is a wise old devil in certain ways. You know, he can have stuff that other people hadn't the time to listen to simply because they were busy doing all the things that the old granddad didn't do, you know. So even if we get blamed as men, when we become old men, we're doing nothing, I can assure you that we do retain an awful lot of stuff. Try and get the good out of us.
And the other thing that I've learned from this conversation, Christy, is that heritage keeps you young. And I'm taking one look at you, and however the heritage bug caught you, it's kept you young and fit and raring to go.
I'm not too sure. Do you have to check my teeth? You really do. You know, if you're by the horse, you always check his teeth. But thanks to God, I'm still capable of climbing up onto most buildings. But the big problem, what happens when you get to my stage, is how the hell do you get down? You know, you have to get back down onto the ground. That's where the arthritis kicks in. So you really do need somebody there with a blanket in case you fall. But no, heritage can keep you alert and alive. You know, we should be more careful. We should preserve it and protect it, pass on what information we have about it, be willing to learn more about it, and really appreciate what it's all about.
Fantastic words of wisdom from Christy Knieff, the heritage hero. and hopefully I'll see you somewhere along the way in National Heritage Week between the 14th of August and the 23rd of August.
Well, I intend to be actively engaged. Marie Mannion, our heritage officer in Galway, and my boss for, I don't know how many years now, Marie, is already organizing stuff. So I know that we have a few bits and pieces that we have to get done very shortly. I can almost feel her breath on the back of my neck saying, Christy, are you available for next Tuesday or Wednesday? Because the guys are coming with the cameras. We have to do a video on this, this, and this. And we will. And so will numerous community groups throughout County Galway and throughout all of Ireland under the stewardship of the heritage officers and the Heritage Council.
Christy, thank you so much.
Thank you. I enjoyed this.
Thank you for listening to the Heritage Council podcast. For more information about our projects and programs, our work with others and our publications, please check our website, heritagecouncil.ie. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. See you again soon.